This paid commercial may not represent the views of Hubbard Broadcasting Incorporated or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions of this broadcast are solely those of individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does not take responsibility for those statements or opinions and accepts no responsibility or liability for any inaccuracy, errors, or omissions reported during this program.
Welcome to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy from Armature, providing software solutions for conformity assessment, standards, and policy management. Federal Tech Talk is the show that opens up the world of technology to the federal government. Every week, John speaks with public and private sector IT experts to help you understand some of the IT trends and challenges that your agency may be facing. Federal Tech Talk on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Now your host, John Gilroy.
Welcome to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Today in the studio, we have Terry Mulholland, CTO of the IRS. And ladies and gentlemen, I have to tell you that I talked to a member of his staff this week, and I told my wife that, Janet, I got a call from the IRS today, and she was shocked. Imagine you can impress your friends with that, can't you? Oh, no, Terry's going to call. I'm from the IRS and scare him, huh? Terry, tell us about your background here and how you wound up working at the IRS, please.
Well, I've grown up in the IT industry. I actually started out as a programmer, analyst, and operator way back in the days of the IBM 360. I worked at Computer Sciences Corporation here in Greenbelt, Maryland on the Goddard Space Flight System. I moved to the Boeing Company out in Seattle where I spent about 20 years doing systems and ultimately became their first chief information officer. Most notable assignment there was probably working on the 777 airplane, which was the very first digital airplane. That is an airplane designed on the computer rather than a drawing board. And I later moved over to EDS in the IT services industry. Spent a number of years there and went to work also at Visa as their chief technology officer and up to the point where they became a public company. And then this opportunity came in to spend a little time in government. And the IRS challenge that was broached to me by the commissioner at the time was an organization that seemed to be mired in the 1990s from a people, process, and technology view had a number of failed efforts to modernize, and they were looking for someone to come in and get them into the 21st century. So I looked at the opportunity, and it looked very, very challenging.
I'd run. Doable. Someone told me that I'd run away. You were actually foolish enough to jump in. Yeah. Wow.
Well, it was an intellectual challenge, but there was also the opportunity to serve my country. Here's an agency that's at the heart and soul of the revenue side of government. It is what funds freedom in many ways. But yet had been not very successful at doing IT on a large scale. So it just looked like the right time at the right thing. So I just said, I'm going to give this a shot.
In 2 weeks, we're going to have Todd Park come in the studio, and he's going to talk about data palooza and mobile and healthcare IT and all this exciting stuff. But the reason he came to the federal government was just exactly. He said, look, I've got a unique skill set that I can help make a difference. And he came here. I think he was in the West Coast with his wife and kids having fun, but he saw that he had the skill set and he came to make a difference. And it seems like the IRS had a problem. They scratched their head saying, well, how are we gonna solve this problem? Well, we have a fellow here who's got experience with, these are big organizations. I mean, Boeing, huge. I mean, EDS, huge. Visa, huge. I mean, these are big problems that have financial type opportunities. And you kind of been there, done there, got the T-shirt, been beat up, been knocked around, and he's still punching. And so, hey, maybe this guy's got the answer. So that's kind of similar to you and Todd, isn't it?
Yeah, perhaps so. I don't know Todd's background, but certainly a commitment to want to make a difference. And I fundamentally believe most people who work in government, I'll just say for sure the IRS, they, with all the bureaucracy, all the burdens that government people face to get their jobs done, they're here for some other reason. And I firmly believe that it's because they're serving their country.
You know, Terry, back years ago, we're about the same age. When you were programming for the IBM 360, I was working on an iron ore dock. I worked there for 4 years at night. And these iron ore boats would come in, and these huge iron ore boats. And I used to remember looking at them. You'd have to drive a stake next to it and watch the stake to see if the boat was even moving. Wow. Because it's just, it took a long time for it to move. Tons and tons, hundreds of tons of iron ore in there. And I would see little speedboats zip around it and moving quick. And I think people say, well, the IRS got a problem. It's like a little speedboat. Just flick a switch and change the problem right there. Well, it's more like an iron ore boat than a little speeder, isn't it?
Well, it's mainly because of the mission in which you're responsible for all of the taxpayer information ever filed on an individual, with trusting that the information will not be revealed inadvertently to anyone who's not authorized to see it. Plus, you're expected to process it and do it pretty fast, so people get the refunds, which is their money. But as a result of the mission and investment over a long period of time, basically 50 years, the IRS figured out how to do tax processing and could do it very, very reliably. But much like the boat example you just gave, very hard to change the course you were on. And previous attempts to modernize the computing systems had failed, mainly because it was attempts to change too fast, perhaps.
Speaking of age, I've been doing radio for 20 years, and I remember in the mid-90s talking about this strange new thing called PDF, Portable Document Format, and I'd have listeners call in and go, why would anyone worry about that? What's the value of that? And I had to come up with a real practical example. And the example I came up with was you guys, it was the IRS. I said, well, here's an example. Rather than driving 10 miles to a post office and get one of those silly forms, you go online, you print out the form. And I think, you know, whether or not I like it or not, IBS, 20 years ago, the IRS was indicating some willingness to change and adapt. And I think maybe that was the first start in the mid-90s. At least they wanted to change and adapt to the computer system that we have now.
Yes, that was the beginning of a shift in a technology basis. Of course, that was long before my time. What we're doing now, of course, is wanting all that data to be filed electronically is certainly our preferred method. And this year, the taxpayers did, in fact, use their tax software and filed electronically. And those formats, in fact, because it's done on the computer, are mainly XML. Again, a nice use of advanced technology that allows us to, if we want, to process literally every data field.
The purpose of this discussion today is to talk about a win, and the win is CADE, C-A-D-E, CADE 2. I'm just trying to put this in perspective. If I just, first sentence out of my mouth is CADE 2, no one's going to understand what we're talking about. If you look at the last 15, 20 years, we can see, in general, the United States has become more and more automated, more and more information technology, and people look at the IRS, and Congress has turned to the IRS and said, here's a mandate. We want 80% of the people filing electronically. Go after it, Terry. I mean, that's pretty much what they said. They said, okay, we want more and more people filing electronically. And do you realize that this is financial information that has to be safeguarded? It's a little trickier than ordering donuts online or something. And that was a challenge that IRS was faced, was a mandate from the folks on the lawmakers in Capitol Hill saying, hey, 80% or bust.
Yeah. And given that the processing system itself had been, as I say, honed over 50 years, it's a tape-based system. Operated in batch mode. Basically, whatever returns came in would be processed weekly, and often it would take roughly around 3 weeks to synchronize all the various databases around the IRS, so that if you happen to call during that period of time, people might say, well, you need to call back in a bit because we don't have the most current information on you yet, because the information simply hadn't been updated. Throw electronic filing on top of that as part of the modernization effort. When the data comes in, it's going to come in much faster than through the paper processes. And ideally, you would like to then process it at the speed at which it is coming in. And thus, this CADE 2 project, which stands for Customer Account Data Engine, was launched. That allowed us to start thinking about the data that's coming in and to manage it in a way that a modern IT community would manage it, that is using technology like a relational database. There have been a number of what I would call failed attempts to do this before, to move off of these legacy environments, these very large-scale systems that, by the way, worked very, very well. The IRS always had a good filing season. Returns got processed. Refunds were delivered in the committed 21 days. And from a taxpayer point of view, perhaps impatient to get the refund very fast, but internally, we were not certainly processing the way a 21st century IT shop would process.
No complaints about accuracy back in the day. It was accurate.
Yeah, pretty much. But timeliness of information, if you called for help, if you had an issue with a notice, getting all the information that was current about everything you had filed, because items would pass in the mail. And so people were faced literally with a problem of timeliness of data. And thus K2 was put in place to speed up the processing, move from this batch weekly format that typically had, been in place for 50 years, and now move to daily processing. And that was the big transformation.
Good. We're talking about transformations at the IRS, CADE2, C-A-D-E-2. Have to take a break and come back. Talk more about setting the stage for the change and what happened in the midst of the change and some best practices for listeners who are scratching their heads about change management. Maybe get some best practices from Terry Mulholland. Because you are listening to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Today we are speaking with Terry Mulholland, CTO at the IRS. Welcome back to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Today in the studio, Terry Mulholland, CTO at the IRS. And no, I'm not getting hauled off to jail because of my tax returns. We're talking about a successful project at the IRS, something called CADE, C-A-D-E, CADE2. I was the MC at an event 2 months ago for ACT-IACT. And was up on stage, gave out 20 or 30 awards, and someone from the IRS got an award, and I said, I remember the IRS. I remember what they did back with the PDFs, and I didn't know anything about CADE, and I thought it'd be a good case study to let federal information professionals know that, yes, you got tough problems, and yes, you can win. You don't have to, jump out the window. You can win, and this is the case study here in how to win. Talk about the challenge you were presented, Terry, and how you gather information, and this whole idea of change in humans, very tough. I mean, what did you do, and how did you accomplish it?
Yeah, very interesting problem set, because here, what I discovered was an organization had some very good people, masters of their craft, but they were also the equivalent of guild shops, in that there were lots of people, apprentices, so to speak, who may not have been have a lot of skills in IT, and then journeymen, so to speak, of people who have a fair amount of knowledge, but are following the masters. And the problem with a guild shop, you can get some very nice projects done, but every master of their craft wants to do it their way. And thus, one of the things that was missing was, I'll just simply say, standard processes, standard technology choices, standard ways to do things. That was very common in the commercial world in the 1980s and 1990s. So one of the things that I set out to do was to address the people, process, and technology aspects of this IT community, to bring them into an environment that's comparable to the commercial world in the 21st century. Starting out, you'd say, on a technology basis, we had a mix of every possible technology choice, because again, the masters of the craft would pick what they wanted, what programming language they would use, what platform they want to run it on, and such. We'd establish an architecture with very narrow choices, but very current choices. For example, the programming language, there's only one choice, and it's Java. We're going to operate the operating system of choice. Linux is the choice. Those kinds of decisions narrowed the playing field, or the variation that would end up making IT systems very difficult to transfer information between. Fundamental other issue, though, was, and I'll call it, being data-centric. I told the organization that we would start all projects by establishing a data model. And in fact, the very first thing we did was build a data model for the IRS so that every data element the IRS needs, uses, creates, updates is now well-defined in unambiguous terms so that adjusted gross income would mean the same to anyone in any program. We wouldn't be debating whether it was a packed decimal format or some other format. This is the format that we've all agreed to. And once that was established as a philosophy of being data-centric, build your data, understand that data model, then decide the functions that you would want to have that access or update it. Second thing was process. We adopted commercial industry best practices in the software engineering space. It's CMMI is the name of the process. And what it does is establish consistent, coherent, cohesive processes for software engineering. And at a minimum, get to level 3 of that as measured by an external agency. And you're by definition at the very beginning at level 1. And it takes roughly 18 months to move between levels. And it took us roughly around 3 years to achieve level 3. It also meant, however, we had to apply similar standard processes to the way we operated computer systems. In that case, it's something called ITIL or ITIL, depending on how you want to pronounce the acronym. But an industry standard set of processes for literally operating, doing change management, problem management, configuration management of any IT system. And then quickly, the last piece was the people side. The most important piece was investing in training people in these new processes, in these new technologies, knowing that we wouldn't do this overnight, but that this would be a constant drive to anytime we had the opportunity to do something new, we were going to apply the new processes to it. And if there was one thing we emphasized that I think other agencies in particular could work is change the model, the relationship, the way people dealt with vendors and suppliers. IRS had a vendor culture. That is, the vendors were viewed as just a cost. You know, here's what we want from you, and we'll pay you a certain amount of money, but not exactly open to new ideas. What we wanted from the suppliers was a collaborative model where they felt comfortable suggesting new technologies, new ways of doing business to us, and that they would get a fair hearing and a conversation with the right people about how we could adapt these processes. So basically, the IT organization consists of far more than just the people that report to you, but consists of all the people and all the supplier communities who can affect the way you actually perform. So that collaboration model where, whether it's on a development project, or whether you're actually operating a system where suppliers are involved, became very, very critical to the success. And we emphasized that. No finger pointing. There would be absolutely none. We would not blame a supplier. We would not blame another organization in the IT shop for anything that went wrong. It became an us. And I, of course, would have to model that with my direct reports from the top, and do it consistently over a number of years to demonstrate the success. And I think that's something that people ought to adopt, just as a way of being. Treat people as the way you would want to be treated, and a heck of a lot better things are more likely to result than not, especially when things go wrong. You want people to be willing to go the extra mile because this is an environment in which they are respected and they knowledge that they have is respected. So that's what we emphasize, people, process, and technology. And the K2 success of getting to daily processing. Imagine an organization that's been the IRS doing tax processing one way for 50 years in a weekly cycle. If something went wrong on Monday, we'll fix it. We got all week to fix it. Now you only have hours or minutes to fix it. And that meant we had to really apply the technology, the processes, and collaborative thinking to respond to any issues that would arise. And the daily processing implementation, the benefit to taxpayers, of course, is that their tax returns now, when filed, get processed daily, as so that information about them, if they call for any questions or issues, is known much more quickly to all the other people inside the IRS. We no longer have to tell them, call back in 3 weeks. Basically, within 2 days, all the relevant databases are updated with their information.
Terry, we're going to have to take a break here. And when I come back, what I'd like you to do is compare this with the commercial world. In the commercial world, could you mandate Linux and Java and not get pushback? And when you went to the federal government, you mandated, apparently, Java and Linux. And want to see how, you know, human beings are involved in change management. I mean, if I imagine that some people had said, we don't like it, and you'd say, well, hit the road. How did you deal with these humans and their resistances? Because I know you had resistance. I mean, I guarantee that.
Yeah,
and
sure.
And how to handle that? Because there may be people who are listening who are trying to make big changes in their organization, and they think a standard way of doing something may improve the quality of the output, and they may get pushback from employees and how to handle it, especially in the federal environment compared to a commercial environment. I'm kind of interested in that answer myself. You're listening to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Today we're speaking with Terry Mulholland, CTO at the IRS. I thought we're talking technology. We're talking human beings and change management more than anything else. Welcome back to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Today in the studio, we have Terry Mulholland, CTO at the IRS. You know, a competition in town is called WGTS, and I listened to it on the way in here. And they're positive. They have positive stories and positive statements. And that's what I like about this interview, Terry, is, yes, yes, this is a success story. Let's talk about it and brag. You can get down 18th and K and get a little handout and go, hey, look, this is a problem we had. It was a major significant problem. We overcame the problem. In fact, we're pretty close to what Congress wanted 10 years ago. They wanted 80%. You guys were like 78% electronic filing. So, I mean, you've overcome a lot of issues and significant issues with a large organization dealing with financial information. That's a huge challenge. Terry, your background in the commercial world, Boeing, Visa, big for-profit companies. If you run a for-profit company, you say, okay, everyone's got to wear a white socks tomorrow, you're fired, they're going to change. If you say we have to use Java and Linux, they're going to change. In the federal world, if you mandate a change like that, that's got to be handled quite differently, doesn't it?
Yeah, yes, it does. But I also want to say it's not quite a dictatorial environment in the commercial environments either. You're still dealing with people. You still have to, you want an environment where people feel respected and their opinion is worth something. So I brought that to the IRS. So when we establish standards like Java or Linux, you give people the opportunity to influence the decision. So that they have the opportunity to say, I think that may be the dumbest thing I've ever heard of, and this is why. And you listen to it and give them a place, a space, a forum that they can make an opposite case. But what's key is you disposition everything that comes in, every disagreement, you provide the feedback to the people who made it, that they were heard and listened to. And this is what we did with your counter proposal. But you make a decision. And thus, in the design of various aspects of K2, which is the daily processing and relational database environment now for the IRS, being data-centric, we allowed for the fact that people might have different opinions technically along the way. And every single argument someone would have for doing something a different way was reviewed and dispositioned. So and that disposition provided back to the suggester. So I think that means working in a collaborative way, people could say, you know, I was heard. Maybe I wasn't to get my way, but at least I had a chance to be heard. And on a lot of the technology decisions that we've made, I understand the technology very well. And thus, I want to say BS proof, but I knew when folk might be trying to pull wool over my eyes and such.
Very discreetly phrased.
and there wasn't very much of that because I think, again, of trying to be collaborative, that people could be heard. Now, whether that's really true or not, surveys can tell that difference. But I think the success that we've had of moving along and transforming the way we deal with technology, transforming our processes, the way we work, and then most importantly, transforming the way that we deal with our teams and the people on the teams over the long term have really proved to be a success for the IRS.
You know, Terry, a lot of my listeners are involved in social media. If you want to read my blog, I'll be blogging about this interview. You go to Google and type in John Gilroy blog, and it pops up. If you want to follow me on Twitter, you can follow me at Ray Gilray. Someone else took my name, so I had a, kind of this funny imaginary name, at Ray Gilray. I talk about my interviews and about technology and all kinds of things. I talk about trending phrases and popular topics. And, you know, a trending phrase right now is this insourcing, outsourcing, and vendor relationships. So my question to you is, since you started the IRS, what's been your position on relationship with vendors? Are you saying, no, we got the talent here, we can handle that? Or are you saying, well, no, we really have to have outsiders who have higher skill levels? And have you learned anything from the commercial world and applied to the IRS in this regard?
Yeah, I worked for companies that had both outsourced, and I also worked for an outsourcer, EDS. So I knew both sides of the world. One of the interesting lessons from that day was that took a while to learn, but still important. You never outsource for just cost reasons. You should outsource because you don't have the skills to execute a particular environment or technology, and it's not in your core competency to develop that yourself. So taking that model inside, where the IRS had been frankly directed by the Congress at one point to outsource its development of the early CADE system, what was called CADE 1, what we took to heart was, you know, we have outsourced our secret sauce, our way of doing things. And so I moved to a model where we would become the integrator, not external. And I probably will, during my tenure here, will not move away from that model. You got to be responsible for knowing how information works in your enterprise. And if you give up the integration role to externals, you basically have given up that knowledge for a long, long time. Legacy systems, of course, last seemingly forever. As I say, the IRS had its individual master file running the place for some 50 years and such. So these environments, whether commercial or in government, they last a long time. So my suggestion to folk is be careful about what you outsource. Do it for reasons other than cost. But if you can hold on and be the integrator, maintain control over your architecture, I think you'll be a lot better off. And that is certainly what we've done with any of the things, new projects that have come along. We're the integrator. We do use externals. There are some very, very good suppliers out there who partner with us, they work in collaboration with ourselves so that things are done, again, I would say, very much more jointly than at arm's length.
Terry, it's time to brag. You got to stand up in your chair and yell and scream and talk about success because you've had a lot of success. Let's talk about it, you know? I mean, if you process 200 million tax returns a year and it costs you $3 a pop, and then all of a sudden you implement a new system and you drastically reduce this drops costs drastically. I mean, this is, how can the federal government reduce costs? Well, right here, talk to Terry. I mean, that's what you did, didn't it? It dropped from $3 to like 50 cents. It's an incredible drop, isn't it?
It's down in the small numbers, depending on how you add up costs. But certainly electronic filing has been a great boon this particular year for us. In which, in fact, we committed all tax forms to be in an XML format, and the preparers work their software, the packages that people use in their PCs at home, or if they happen to drop by a tax preparer's office, so that all these forms could be filed electronically. Just about the only things that are not are amended returns, which are in the plans downstream, and a couple other smaller forms that have not yet been converted. But for the vast, vast majority of taxpayers, you can now file electronically, and the data is just processed by all the changes that we've made much more speedily, and information is now available to people inside the IRS to handle queries from the taxpayer when they have questions, and the information is certainly far more timely and so much of greater value to
and more accurate too.
We
submitted our tax return, and Janet got an email within 10 seconds that said bad number, and she had transposed the number. Well, it's things like it happened. In a paper-based system, we could have mailed it off. It could have taken 4 days to get to Philadelphia, and then 3 weeks for a clerk to take a look at it, and then inform and bounces. I mean, guess what? We got to return back quicker because the system kind of filtered, electronically filtered information. It said, no. Have it correct before you even consider it. So it makes it more accurate, too.
Accurate, too. And one of the other things that we have stuck in the middle of these processes for electronically is fraud detection. Our ability to detect fraud up front is vastly improved from a number of years ago. And this is, again, because we took over accountability for the models that can be used to detect fraud and the processing of same, so that we're trying to reduce the probability that we send out a refund to people who don't deserve it.
Take a quick break. We're going to talk more about major systems change management, and the IRS. You're listening to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Today in the studio, Terry Mulholland, CTO at IRS. Welcome back to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Today in the studio, Terry Mulholland, CTO at the IRS. The IRS was challenged by Capitol Hill to make a transition to electronic filing and make it more accurate and do it faster. And by the way, we're going to change the rules as you're doing this. And Terry was foolish enough to accept the challenge. He came from the commercial world and applied some of those practices, but some creative practices too in this big project of change management. CADE 2 is what it's called. Been successful. How long has it been online now?
2 years.
2 years. And regular bumps and maintenance, but no big disasters,
none,
huh?
None whatsoever. And the daily processing parts worked incredibly smoothly.
You know, I wish there's a hashtag on Twitter for success, because we should hashtag this and go, well, look, you know, there are thousands of federal information professionals out there, and they're getting depressed and saying, I can't do this, I can't do that. Well, yes, you can. You can read the case study on CADE 2 and find out that, yes, big, serious projects can change, you can be successful with it, and move on, quit your whining, and just go after it, which sounds like something you'd say, Terry, but it's really what you have to say. You have to say, well, this is how we're doing it. I'll respect your opinion, but from my experience in the last 30 years, this will work better. Let's try this, and then we'll find out how it works. And that, you have to approach people with an adult attitude.
Exactly. Exactly right.
You know, there are people who are listening saying, well, this guy's been around here and there, been involved since IBM 360. I wonder what kind of cell phone he uses. So what I do is I ask everyone this 10-question test. This is my nerd test. I had Vince Cerf answer these questions, Jimmy Wales, Todd Park. Everyone's got to answer these questions. And they're kind of an up-close and personal finding out, oh, he's really not a nerd. Oh, yeah, that guy's really a nerd. And you're going to ask these 10 questions. We'll scientifically find out if you're a card-carrying nerd or not.
All right.
First question. The year you bought your first computer.
Oh, good grief. It was an Atari.
Whoa, that's points.
That would have been
late 70s.
79, if I recall correctly.
Wow, that's a good nerd point there.
Yeah.
Year your first cell phone?
Oh, that would have probably been 95.
95, okay. Losing points there. And do you have your own Twitter feed?
No, I do not.
And do you have your own blog?
I no longer do.
Oh, that's a good answer. I've never had that answer before. Anything to do with handling
well, it has
the information?
To do with being in government.
I know. You've
got to be
yeah.
careful about taking positions are inappropriate.
I think that. Boy, you're really carefully phrasing it. I'm liking it. Do you use any personal online backup systems?
Yes, I do.
Okay. And what kind of smartphone do you have?
An iPhone and a BlackBerry.
Democrat and Republican, both flavors. Number of apps on your Apple, let's say?
On my iPad, probably about 20.
20, okay.
Yeah.
I normally ask people what kind of tablet they use, but now I'm changing it to how many tablets do you have in your family? It's almost like you expected to have two or three. How many do you have?
I have it just an iPad.
Okay, you know, just an iPad. Well, conservative guy. Okay.
Yes.
What social networking sites do you participate in?
LinkedIn is mm-hmm. the principal one. A little bit of Facebook. Mainly Facebook is, I went on and use it because I was just wanted to keep up with the technology.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm not a big Facebook user.
And the last book you read was electronic or paper?
Electronic.
Oh, reasonable showing there. You know, I give you a pretty mid to high. I have to run this through my, I have a UNIVAC in my basement. I'll run it through UNIVAC and print out something on Green Bar and put it in the U.S. mail and expect it to arrive in the next 3 weeks and find out if you're a card-carrying nerd or not.
Perhaps at one time, but maybe not now.
So. Yeah, yeah. It's not bad, really. Electronic pay. And the last book I read was, I'm not telling, but you'd get more nerd points than I would, and that's for sure. Terry, you've had a long, successful career, East Coast, West Coast, federal, commercial. You've seen a lot of things and been surprised by, I've certainly been surprised by many, many things. Back in 1980, I was afraid that Apple wouldn't succeed. Now we have Apple making more money than Microsoft. I mean, maybe 5 years ago, you wouldn't have taken that bet. If you're a betting man, what are you betting on for the future here? Are we going to see the end of desktop computers? Is everybody going to file their taxes with their iPad, with their iPhone? Is it going to be I'm doing my taxes with Google Glasses? I mean, what's going to happen with my listeners? What's going to happen from an IT perspective and just from a consumer perspective with their taxes in the future of the IRS?
Yeah, with the IRS, I think you'll see a far more of our application and interactions with taxpayers will be through the web, specifically IRS.gov. We tested the waters a bit with the redesign of IRS.gov, which went live last summer. If you've looked at the site, it's completely different from what we had had before. It had basically been last been touched about 10 years ago. And with the idea that we want people to go to the website rather than phones in order to get a service from the IRS.
Save money for the federal government.
Save money for the federal government. Actually save time and effort for the taxpayers, if you like, by going to a place that's easy to use, something familiar to them, places where they can get answers very quickly. We, in fact, also post out on YouTube a lot of videos about how to fill out tax forms, how to use certain IRS services and such. Some of them are, you know, obviously get a lot of attention during filing season, particularly as April 15th approaches. But that's also been a very interesting way to communicate directly with taxpayers. There's a possibility down the road we may deal directly with taxpayers electronically. There, what we worry the most about is clearly releasing PII data to the wrong person. And so we have to do that very, very carefully. But it's certainly going to be feasible for us to do that as we do more and more web services for dealing directly with the taxpayer community. We'll also be using the technology of social media inside the IRS. It's, again, an area that we move cautiously on because it's sort of in the blood, so to speak, of IRS people that you do not share PII data with anyone who's not authorized to see it.
Of course. My tax return, buddy.
Oh, that's right. And I can tell you that everyone knows us in the IRS, and it's like a line you don't cross. So if we've set up social media inside, we have to be very careful that people are not inappropriately sharing PII data, even if it's inside the firewall. I shouldn't see your data, for example, kind of thing. So we're moving there, and I think in 5 years we can come back and talk about our use of tools like Yammer and other things inside the IRS. So because people who work for the IRS, of course, work in the community, you want those kind of devices that they have on the outside to also be used in dealing with the IRS or dealing with IRS processes. And we've begun that with simple applications like if you've done a Where's My Refund or IRS to Go, a very early example of putting something out for the iPhone and Android community that allow people to check the status of their filing, you know, on their phone. And you're going to see a lot more of that kind of thing down the road.
From a security perspective, Visa, obviously, a pretty good target for the malicious code writers out there. You see more or less attacks? I mean, you can just answer this very discreetly or carefully. I don't have many reports at all about the IRS and security concerns at all. I mean, no one ever talks about it. Must not. I don't know. Is it different concerns, mounting concern for you?
It'll be a continuous mounting concern. We use defense in depth techniques, like most of the federal agencies, where we wanted to protect ourselves from the obvious. Continuing updates of the firewalls and strengthening all of our, I'll say, so-called defenses on the inside. But like any other enterprise, government agency, and others, you cannot say 100% that you're bulletproof. Anybody who says that is a fool. And in fact, most people would say you've probably already been exposed. You don't even know it. Our job is to make sure that we prevent data breaches, we prevent data spills, and if we discover any, that we react very, very quickly. It's sort of been our model.
Excellent. Thank you very much for this interview. Kind of put some of the things in perspective. I just want all my listeners to know that CADEK2 is a win for the federal government, big feather in your hat. And I think anyone listening here can understand that, yes, they're in a challenging environment, but yes, it can be done. Challenges can be overcome. And lesson learned right here in front of us, Terry Mulholland.
Thank you, John.
You've been listening to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. I'd like to thank my guest, Terry Mulholland, CTO at the IRS. Thanks, Terry.
You've been listening to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy of the Armature Corporation, providing consulting, application development, and business productivity solutions on the Microsoft platform. If you missed any part of this program, you can hear the entire show on our website, federalnewsradio.com. Federal Tech Talk, Tuesday mornings at 11, only on Federal News Radio 1500 AM, your source for federal news now.